As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yo, yo, welcome to another post-game edition of the Forum Club. I am your co-host, Jovan Buha, Lakers beat writer for The Athletic. And tonight, the Lakers defeated the Oklahoma City Thunder 128-99 to sweep their second road trip of the season and prove to a franchise best 7-0 on the road. And I'm going to keep this game recap short because the Lakers have just been dominant for three consecutive games. These were consecutively the three best performances of the season. I still think that second Houston game was the best performance of the three, but this one was basically on par with it. From a defensive perspective, not as dominant in terms of steals and blocks, only six steals and six blocks in this one. But this one to me was more an offensive performance where, yet again, you had six guys in double figures, including LeBron leading the way 26 points off of five threes. Montrezl Harrell had what I think was his best game offensively of the season with 21 points. And then you had AD with 18, and he had a really hot start, scored the first, I think nine of the first 13 for the Lakers, just a dominant performance from him. Did not have a steal or a block, which was unique after he had 17 blocks in his last five games. But this one was just, the Lakers were playing a team that is, should be a lottery team, should be a bottom tier lottery team. They took care of business. And I think that's the main takeaway from this road trip is the Lakers took care of business. They did have somewhat of an easy schedule to start this season. They are still amid the schedule. They got the Pelicans and the Warriors coming up, and we'll see. New Orleans just had a tough game against the Clippers and pushed them to the last few minutes of that one. Golden State has been playing a lot better and kind of refound their groove with Draymond Green back in the lineup. So neither one of those games is going to be particularly easy. And then after that, the Lakers play the Bucks. So the games are starting to ramp up. It's starting to be better competition, and the Lakers have actually struggled more at Staples Center than they have on the road, just by virtue of being 7-0 on the road and 3-3 at Staples. So I think that, it's going to be a nice little test to see, to apply their level of play recently to some of these other teams. And can you crush a Pelicans team at home? Can you beat a, surging Warriors team at home? Can you beat the Bucks? That's what I'm more interested in is, I think this stretch has been nice. It's been, as I've said the last couple podcasts, a reassertion of their dominance and their place as the clear-cut best team in the league. They're 10-3, the first team in the NBA to reach double-digit wins. No other team has more than eight wins. So they've already established a little bit of a gap there between them and the rest of the league. And then, the big news of the day as well, which I think we should get into, and I know we'll get into with the fan Q&A, is the Brooklyn Nets traded for James Harden today in a blockbuster four-team deal, with the primary pieces being James Harden going to Brooklyn, Caris LeVert going to Indiana, Jared Allen going to Cleveland, Victor Oladipo, and a boatload of picks, eight picks, four first round picks, and four potential pick swaps going to Houston. So I think it's an interesting trade. We have no idea what's going on with Kyrie Irving, if he's ever going to play basketball again, quite frankly, because he's just disappeared. And, you know, from everything the Nets have said publicly, it seems like they have no indication of why he's gone or how long he's going to be gone. You know, obviously that could just be public posturing from them, but I think that, you know, even some of the reporting around the trade was kind of interesting, seeing how people talked about Kyrie's involvement and almost, you know, implying the potential of him not being there. So that whole situation is weird, but, you know, regardless, even if it is a Kyrie for Harden swap, you know, theoretically that makes the Nets a better team, as long as James Harden buys in, gets in better shape, is willing to, you know, cede some of the offense to Kevin Durant in a way he never fully did with Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook. So, you know, I think Brooklyn clearly has now the highest potential in the East. I would say if, you know, everyone's at their ceiling, Brooklyn has the highest ceiling in the East. So it is a team for the Lakers to kind of put on their radar now, I think more so than even before. You know, I think that on paper that they might be the second best team in the league. To me, it's between them and the Clippers, you know, behind the Lakers at number one. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It gives the Lakers a potential foe in the finals that, you know, projecting out, like, they could see the next 2-3 years, you know, depending on how long this Lakers run goes. So that honestly was the most exciting part of today, you know, more so than this game. You know, this one was over by halftime, similar to the two Houston games. You know, I think the only other thing of note from this game was LeBron shooting 5 of 8 from deep, and he's averaging a career high in 3-point attempts. You know, had already been averaging a career high in terms of per 36 per 100 possessions, but now he's actually averaging, you know, on a per game basis, a career high. And it's something that he's, you know, added to his game over the last half decade or so. Like, you know, really that 2012-13 season when he shot 40% on about 3 attempts per game, that was his like breakout 3-point shooting season. But, you know, LeBron's shot has historically kind of been up and down. It has trended around league average, you know, slightly above league average in recent seasons, but he's definitely taking more threes. And, you know, the moment of the trip was that look away three in Houston in the second game. And I think it's something we're seeing more from him. I mean, we saw it last season, some of those deep threes he takes. Frank Vogel recently called him, you know, probably the best shooter on the team, and that he has the green light to pull up whenever from wherever. And, you know, part of that is just he's the best player in the league. He's the best player on the team. So he does have that green light no matter what. But, you know, Vogel has been adamant in praising his 3-point shooting. And I do think that with the way teams defend LeBron in the pick and roll, they're always going to go under, because going over and forcing him into the paint is just it's death. Like he's getting to the rim. He's finishing. He's getting fouled. He's kicking out to a shooter. He's doing a dump off pass to AD or Trez, or, you know, maybe a cutting KCP or Alex Crusoe or something like that. So like, you don't want to force him into the paint. It's worse when he's in the paint. But you also can't give him open threes the way that a lot of teams do. And, if he continues to hit threes at the rate he's hitting them and take them at the rate he's taking them, I think that's a nice weapon, that just adds to his offensive arsenal, which is already, you know, one of the best of all time. So, I mean, you know, encouraging road trip. This was a much better trip than last trip, which was a 4-0 road trip. But, you know, as we discussed then, there was a couple of games that went down to the wire, a couple of subpar defensive performances. This was 3 straight games of just dominance from the Lakers. They led for 141 minutes and 15 seconds out of 144 possible minutes, which is just an absurd stat. And so that includes the, you know, seconds before when the game is tied 0-0 and before, you know, one team scores. But in all 3 games, the Lakers were the first team to score and just basically, you know, led wire to wire in, you know, the second Houston game and this OKC game. So just 3 consecutive dominant performances And I honestly don't have much to add, so let's get into the open forum part of the show.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
First question here from Eric Black, a friend of the pod at Eric_Black. Three, who guards who if LA Brooklyn meet in the finals? And there's been I think there's three or so questions like this. From Aniket Mohan, how do you think the Lakers match up against the reloaded Nets team? And I think there's another one somewhere in here. But essentially, how do the Lakers and Nets match up? Well, one, I gotta know what's happening with Kyrie Irving. I gotta know if he's even playing. And you know, I say that in jest a little bit, but you know, it hasn't been out there that there's some concern of like, is he returning? How long is this absence going to be? Is this, you know, is this going to be a long break? Is this going to be a permanent break? Like, what's going on with him? So until we know that, it's hard to say, because I do think, you know, and this isn't like a hot take, but if Kyrie Irving's out of the equation, it definitely changes the way that the Nets look, especially with already losing Spencer Dinwiddie, for the season, you know, losing now Caris LeVert and Jarrett Allen, two young guys who had been playing pretty well for them this season, you know, in replace of Harden. And I think you do that trade, you know, 10 out of 10 times, you know, Brooklyn had to do that, but it's not as if they, you know, gave up nothing. Like they have lost several key contributors. You know, I would argue their three best players after KD and Kyrie. And then if you lose Kyrie on top of that, it's tough. So, you know, depth, I think, has all of a sudden become a concern for Brooklyn. You know, they have some pieces that I feel like are kind of streaky, guys that, you know, you can't necessarily rely on night to night. So I think if we're looking at like the stars and maybe how the closing lineups match up, you know, if you're saying their closing lineup I don't even know who their closing lineup is, because I would have said Jared Allen, but now, is it DeAndre Jordan? Like, he hasn't played that well this season, so I don't know if he's in there. Like, do they go KD at the five or Jeff Green at the five? You know, one lineup I've seen floated out there, like Jeff Green, Kevin Durant, Joe Harris, James Harden, Kyrie Irving. Let's say that's their closing five. I think the Lakers match that with AD, LeBron, KCP, and then you go Alex or Dennis and Keefe or Kuz. And, you know, really that comes down to how are those guys shooting? How are they defending? You know, how do the matchups look? Like, as of right now, I'd probably lean Kuz and Dennis. But, you know, if Alex is locking up Kyrie or looking a lot better against him, then, you know, I think you could go Alex. And if, you know, maybe you want Keefe against Jeff Green and you put AD on KD. But I think it's really just going to come down to, like, the Lakers have multiple matchups. Like, I didn't even mention Wes Matthews, who I think could potentially play. I mean, not even potentially, they definitely could play in, you know, that type of matchup. Montrezl Harrell, who is someone who, you know, can feast. You know, if you're putting Jeff Green on Montrezl Harrell, he's going to crash the offensive glass against him. He's going to, you know, post him up, finish inside against him. And you don't want to diverge from going to LeBron and AD, especially if it's a finals matchup. But Montrezl Harrell can do damage if you're putting a Jeff Green on him. So I think, you know, it's tough to say at this point. We haven't even seen these two teams play yet. And again, we don't know what Brooklyn's even going to look like. Like, when is Kyrie returning? You know, how is James Harden going to fit with Kevin Durant? Both guys are in much different phases of their career. And you know, the last time they played together, James Harden was a sixth man of the year. He was a bench player. And, you know, he obviously closed games, you know, was the number three guy on that team as far as from an offensive perspective. But he's now gone from, you know, having everything tailored around him for 8 years in Houston to now essentially being the number two in Brooklyn behind KD? And is he going to accept that? Like, how is that going to work? We saw his teammate last season in Russell Westbrook kind of struggle to adjust to going from having everything tailored around him to sharing the ball and the spotlight with Harden. Like, how is Harden going to do that, right? Like, I think Harden is much more similar to Russell Westbrook than I think we realize in terms of his inability to, fully mesh with guys and some of the issues he's had. Honestly, it's probably been worse than Westbrook, maybe not as an on-court fit, but definitely as an off-court fit. So, there's a lot of questions with this Brooklyn situation. I think from a Lakers side, if you want to talk about how they match up with them defensively, I would probably put, go Kuz or AD on KD. Like, I think I would try out Kuz, and if KD is just roasting him or Kuz gets in foul trouble, that's when you go to AD. You also have LeBron, but I think you don't want to overtax LeBron too much. I think LeBron has a lot of value as a help defender. And, he's going to be running the show offensively, especially come finals time when he's going to be playing, 42 minutes and basically being the full-time point guard. Like, you need to save him defensively. And who knows, maybe there are times that call for, he can obviously switch on to KD. There are times he may defend him, but I do like the AD or Kuz matchups a little bit better. Then I think on Harden, you're going to go KCP, you're going to go Caruso, you're going to go Wes Matthews, some type of platoon of those three. And again, it's going to come down to matchups, foul trouble, shooting, just how guys are looking and playing at that point, health, obviously. So I think there's a lot of factors that are going to play into it. Right now, I'd give KCP the edge, and I think he played Harden really well in those two games in Houston. But so did Alex, and we didn't see Wes against Harden, but he's played well against him in the past too. So I think the Lakers have multiple options there. As far as Kyrie, I think you could go with the other player in terms of, you could put KCP on Harden and Alex Caruso on Kyrie, or you could put KCP on Kyrie and then Caruso or Matthews on James Harden. I think it'd be one of those three. But Dennis, has done a really good job defensively. I recently wrote about, like, his defense has been one of the surprises of the season, of just how good he is defensively, pressuring the ball full court, digging into guys and not just point guards, but, he dug into Luka Doncic and made that a competitive, Christmas matchup. So I don't think you want to put him on Harden, but I think if you're putting him on Kyrie, who basically becomes the third option in this offense, I think that makes sense. And then, I guess looking at that closing lineup, maybe that puts LeBron in a bit of a tough spot where he has to defend like a Joe Harris or a Landry Shamet or something like that and chase those guys. And you don't really want that. So I think you'd probably want LeBron on a Jeff Green. So I think the matchups probably go something like AD on KD, LeBron on Jeff Green, Kuz on KD, KCP on Harden and Caruso or Schroeder on Kyrie. And I think I'm missing, I guess, whoever the other wing is on Joe Harris. You could go smaller, you could go bigger, but I think the Lakers match up pretty well. I think the Lakers are the deeper team. Obviously, three All-Stars is better than two, but I think you can make the case that the Lakers still have the two best players in the matchup, which I think AD versus KD is close. I think LeBron's the best player in the league until proven otherwise. And then you go down the list, like AD to me is definitely better than James Harden or Kyrie Irving. And then AD versus KD is close. But I think we've still yet to see KD hold up a full season, post Achilles. We're almost six months from the finals. That's a long ways away. So I would give AD maybe a slight edge right now, though especially when factoring his defense, but that might be close. But I think you give, the Lakers have the better stars. The Nets just have more stars. So that's close, but then even putting the star matchups aside, I just think the Lakers have more depth, more versatility, more bodies. Like, it's just, you know, I would still favor the Lakers in that series. I do think it would probably be something like a six game series. Like, I do think the Nets could push them a bit, you know, especially if they're clicking and you know, firing on all cylinders. But I would still favor the Lakers in that. A couple more questions from my colleague and good pal, Wozni Lambre at Big Woz. When the heck did Alex Caruso become Mark Price? Well, it's a good question. And it's an important development for the Lakers, because if Alex Caruso is going to shoot like this, and he coming into this game, he was shooting 47%, went, I believe, 2-for-2 from deep. Yeah, went 2-for-2 from deep. So that's actually going to go up. That's probably going to be close to 50% by tomorrow morning. Look, if Alex is shooting this well, and we know what he brings defensively, we know that he has a connective, you know, element to his game that just makes the Lakers better on both ends. You know, he helps the transition game. He obviously helps the defensive game, you know, can defend multiple positions, is a good help defender, a good on-ball defender, a good pick and roll defender, you know, and then offensively, good cutter, good in transition, and is now becoming a good spot up shooter. And, you know, he's not going to shoot 50%. He's not Mark Price. But if he can keep it up in like the 37, 38, 39% range, which I think is realistic, that is a weapon that, you know, not only deserves more playing time in the playoffs, but is a potential closer. And you know, we did see that last season, but that was pre, you know, Dennis. And, you know, Dennis is clearly someone who cares about his role. He cares about his playing time. He cares about his shots and his points. So I do think it's going to be important to, you know, usually close games with him in the playoffs, as long as he's not, you know, just killing the team, which, you know, he's yet to do that. But Alex is a capable closer, and who knows, maybe there will be times where they go Dennis and Alex next to each other in the backcourt, and you go a little bit smaller. You know, maybe you slide KCP to the three, or, you know, you go with Kuz at the three. Like, there are different things you can do there. But I think Alex, you know, all jokes aside, Alex's 3-point surge has really been a bright spot for the Lakers, and it's been one of the surprises. You know, a lot of guys are shooting really hot right now, and I think it's going to come down. Like, guys are going to drop 10 to 15%, you know, for multiple guys on this team. But if Alex can keep it, you know, again, above that 36, 37% range, that is a good shooter who deserves probably more time than he's currently been getting. And let's see, this is a fun one from Jake at I Am Cohen Crazy. Sorry if I butchered your Twitter handle. Favorite Kobe sneaker, favorite LeBron sneaker. My favorite Kobe sneaker is actually not a Nike. I know that I'm a little bit of a psycho with that, but my favorite Kobe is actually the Kobe 1 from Adidas. That was a shoe that, like, right when I got into basketball, I was 8 years old. It was around 2000, 2001. And that was the shoe Kobe was wearing at the time. And, you know, I was drawn to it. That's the boxy one that's based on the Audi, you know, car and, you know, back then. And it's not a shoe that's aged particularly well, but it's, you know, it's, to me, it's a sentimental shoe. And I do think it's a classic. I think you've seen Adidas got, you know, it was brought back as the Adidas Crazy One, and you've seen guys wear it. I guess if I had to pick a favorite pair or a favorite colorway of it, it would probably be the Sunshine one, which was the yellow one. You know, I never actually had the shoe until recently. When Adidas re-released it in 2014, I bought the white pair, the Stormtroopers, or the yellow pair, the Sunshines. I thought they had that like grayish mesh one, which I thought was kind of funky and cool. The silver ones I also really liked. But I just, there's something about those shoes that, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if you have a favorite movie or song that you kind of know isn't good, but you still love it no matter what, and it's your favorite, like, that's kind of my relationship with that shoe, where I would go as far as to say it might be my favorite shoe of all time. And despite it being boxy and heavy and not a great basketball shoe to play in, you know, I've played in it. You know, it's a pretty heavy shoe. I just, there's something about it that, if you're asking my favorite Kobe Nike shoe, I would say the Kobe four, you know, like the 4, 5, 6, they're all pretty close. But for me, the four, you know, was one of the Kobe Nikes that I had, the Kobe two, the Kobe four. And that to me was just, you know, that was the first low top one. And that just changed the game with low top sneakers. And, you know, I remember being in New York and buying those. And when I was, I believe, a senior in high school. So that, you know, sentimental again, but that would be that. As far as LeBron's, I'm actually a fan of his more recent sneakers. So I would say like the LeBron 16 and the LeBron 17, you know, I'm a fan of. Even the LeBron 15, I thought was really cool. So you know, definitely the last, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18, like that kind of range. And then, you know, the classic, like the Zoom generation or Air Zoom generation, his first shoe, that was one of my first basketball shoes. I got that in middle school, you know, when LeBron was a rookie. And, you know, I love that shoe. So that would be probably that one would be number one. And then, you know, I would say 15 and 17 are my two favorites of the more recent ones. So it's a good sneaker question. I'm a big sneakerhead, so I love the sneaker questions. If you guys ever have those, please let me know. And we'll do one more to close us out. Aaron Lebhan at Barnes 12. I think this is, I've answered a few of your questions, so I like your questions. Is Gasol's impact underrated by fans because he doesn't fill the box score? The team is more dominant on the boards this season despite losing McGee and Howard. Yes, I recently wrote about this in my State of the Lakers. Marc Gasol's mistakes are egregious, where you will see him get blown by in the pick and roll, or you know, someone will dance with him on the perimeter and then hit a shot in his face. And because of his age and size and kind of physical limitations at this point, he can be prone to some embarrassing defensive mistakes, right? Like we've seen guys blow by him, score over him, and, you know, or him get the ball inside and fail to score over a guard, or, you know, him just throw some wild passes. Like he does have some, egregious mistakes. He does have some egregious errors that really stick out like a sore thumb sometimes. But with that said, I think his strengths and the things he brings are so subtle that you really have to be looking for them, or you really have to understand basketball at a high level. And even me, a lot of times, like when I'll be watching the game, I might not see what he does, but when I go back and rewatch on film and I'm kind of looking for those types of things, that's when you really see it. And with him, it's, of course, the passing, you know, the passing is all time for a big man. You know, he's definitely a top five, if not top three passing big men of all time. But aside from the passing, you know, it's the shooting, it's the spacing, you know, and really, you know, the spacing for me is like the relocation, where, you know, a guy will be driving and he will relocate into their passing window, or just to get out of their way, where, you know, his guy might be kind of close to the driver. And he's going to relocate to make a defender pick your poison. Are you going to help off and leave Mark, who's a capable three-point shooter? Or are you going to relocate with him and clear out the lane and let LeBron or AD go downhill? And then, you know, in addition to that, you know, off-ball stuff like setting screens for guys. He's a good screen setter. He's a little bit of a dirty player. You know, hold guys when boxing out or setting screens or doing stuff like that, you know, clearing out. And then defensively, he's just so smart and savvy. And, you know, I think there are multiple ways to protect the rim, protect the basket. And, you know, I think shot blocking is a very visceral thing. You see it, you know, you see Dwight or JaVale block the shot into the fifth row. It's fun. It's exciting. It's what people get hyped up on, you know, when you're playing or watching basketball. But what Mark does is, you know, he pre-rotates. Like he knows where the ball's going, where the pass is going, where the ball handler is going, and he will pre-rotate there. And I thought, you know, a couple clips I used in my State of the Lakers piece, which I keep referencing, like, you know, James Harden in the pick and roll, Mark was beating him to his spots. And maybe James isn't the best example with him clearly being heavier and out of shape. But, you know, Mark was this brick wall where, like, you know, Harden would try to penetrate and Mark was beating him there. And I think that's the value in Mark. And, you know, yes, I think Dwight could do some of that. JaVale, not as much. But I think Mark is just such a savvy guy that and you know, he has been for most of the season like the second best guy in terms of plus minus net rating. He and LeBron have been the best Lakers pairing this season. So I think, again, it's not perfect. Like, there are, I mean, would you like Mark to lose like 10 pounds and be a little bit more athletic and spry? Like, of course. Would you like him to make more threes? Of course. Would you like him to maybe cut down on some of the wild passes or you know, be better rotating or in the pick and roll? Like, of course. But I think overall, he's been a positive. I do think that he is better than JaVale and Dwight. I think they, you know, in terms of actual rim protection, like, they both are probably better than him. But in terms of everything else he brings, the shooting, the passing, the screening, the spacing, the defensive subtleties, you know, his chemistry already with guys, I think making the Lakers offense just so much better with guys cutting and moving because they know he's going to find them. Like, that stuff to me is more valuable overall than having, you know, energy defensive bigs like Dwight and JaVale. I think you can make the case Lakers should have kept one of them and maybe gone with Mark and that guy or Mark Trez and that guy. But, and you know, kind of maybe rotated the matchups depending on the opponent. But aside from that, I think the Lakers, you know, made the right move in getting Mark. I think it's worked out. I think it's going to continue to work out. And frankly, I think he's looking in better shape. You know, physically, to me, he looks slimmer. He looks more spry. You know, he's not Dwight Howard. He's not Anthony Davis. He's not a freak athlete. But he still is 7'1". He still has a big frame. He has long arms, a lot of size. And, you know, he's still a plus defender. So I know some of the mistakes are you know, ugly and some of them are jarring. And you notice them more than other players' mistakes. But he's actually, I think, making fewer mistakes than most of the Lakers' defenders. It just so happens that his mistakes are kind of more glaring when they do happen. But that is all for tonight. I thank you guys for listening. I appreciate it. As always, if you have any questions for me, be sure to reach out on The Athletic in the comment section or on Twitter or Instagram at Jovan Buha, at JovanBuha. I'm going to be off on Friday, spending some time with my family, with my son. But I will be back on Monday after the Warriors game. And we will also have our weekly podcast tomorrow slash, I guess, today with Anthony and Bill. So be on the lookout for that. But appreciate you guys for listening and talk to you soon.